Welcome, dear listeners, to episode 17 of Campaign 2 of Venture Maidens. If you haven't already, I implore you to throw us a rating and or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your podcatcher of choice is. It's a small but tremendous way to help us out, and we always love reading your exceptionally kind words. And of course, an extra special shout out to the people who ensure that we can keep creating content for you all, our amazing patrons. For everyone who donates on Patreon, we are eternally grateful for your support. Check us out at patreon.com/venturemaidens to see the numerous rewards we bestow even at just the $1 per month level. Thank you to Emily Mayo for composing our theme song, and thank you to Tabletop Audio for providing additional ambient music. For those of us who enjoy joining us live, we're moving our stream time to begin at 6 PM PST instead of 6:30. So when we stream episode 21 on June 15th, catch us at our new permanent stream time of 6 PM PST on our bi-weekly Wednesday schedule. Alright, enough with all that business, let's get into the fun. Last time on Venture Maidens, Aoife stepped away from the rest of the maidens to go on a hot date with Bert and Ernie's son, a young textile designer named Kel. The satyr and the furball hit it off quickly and headed over to meet Kel's employer, a fashion designer named Mistress Silk. Upon reaching Silk's shop, the pair discovered the mistress was missing. Further investigation led to discovering an arcane mirror in the basement that acted as a portal between realms. They heroically stepped through the mirror to the designer's last noted location and were promptly attacked by the animated porcelain dolls keeping the mistress hostage. After a painful fight, the three narrowly escaped back through the mirror. Mistress Silk was grateful to the pair for saving her life and offered Aoife a permanent place in her store as a designer. And that's what happened! Now make sure the safety bars are down and remain inside the vehicle at all times, for adventure awaits.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. At long last, we get a close look at the tragedy of young Rook. But on we go as the time grows small, to heed the weird sisters' beck and call. Listen carefully as we head into Campaign 2, Episode 17, Stitched Together.
Venture Maidens, episode 17, that weird age between 16 and being a fucking adult. Yay, we're here, we've made it. Oh my gosh, and we're all back together! Oh, it's so good to see everyone!
Some of us are literally together.
Literally together, I know! Nassim and Sage are currently sitting in the same room playing, so that's super magical. And last episode, it was just a one-on-one with me and Sage, so welcome back, everybody! How are we all doing? How are we all doing tonight?
Super swell.
Yeah.
A little crusty, personally.
Oh.
This has been a long week. A long opening week, and coming here, I'm all out of my brain today. Okay. I stayed up until 6 a.m. this morning.
Oh, Lord. Well, you know what? Use it.
Real time.
You know what? You can use it. Method act. Because last time we were all together, we were going through some shit, and you were all very crusty and have the bad stink on you. So yeah, it's good.
I'm methoding today.
Yeah, methoding. Before we dive in, I do want to say this is a very adult-themed stream, so you can expect, of course, swearing, fantasy violence. We always just keep, like, a body horror content warning just up in general for our stuff, because, yeah, it's the nature of fantasy storytelling. There are no other specific content warnings for tonight's episode, but if any of those general triggers are things for you you don't feel like you can handle tonight, this may not be the show for you to watch. But with that, let's go ahead and dive in. Hey, everybody, my name is Celeste Conowich, and tonight I will be your Dungeon Master.
Hello, I'm Katie, and I'm going to be playing Laveri Seth, your Drow Rogue.
I'm Nassim, and I am playing
Which one is it?
Fighter, Fitonia Silvertail.
I am Sage, and I am your boisterous bard, Aoife Flannery.
Yay! Oh, boy! Well, like I mentioned earlier, it was a hell of an episode last time, so, cool, great. We are coming off, starting here for this episode, it's the moment after the high intensity action movie moment where you were down below in this like chamber far below the sewers and like you had just defeated the Duke of Pudding, who apparently is a courtier for the Slytherin court, you had heard, and that whole thing passed you by and there was fire and there was this screaming living spellbook who just named Index, who just has been panicking the whole time. And a lot of action moments as you got the hell out of there, ran back through the sewers. And finally, now, as we are picking up, you had just basically popped open this grate and the night air of Chasiana floods over you, over the sweat and the grime and everything else you have accumulated crawling around through the sewers. And you finally have a moment to breathe. So you are popping back up in the city, not, of course, anywhere near that original grate you were from. It seemed like Bartleby was just trying to lead you up out anywhere. Out of the sewers, just to get away from what's going on. So, Lou, as you're looking around, I mean, you're very familiar with Chasiana. You think you probably know the district that you're in. It's vaguely familiar, but, you know, none of the names or anything are popping up to you. So you think you probably have a bit of a walk before you're going to be able to make it back to Bucatini, where you should be. And probably around now, it's about 1 a.m., because the deal was supposed to be at midnight, so you'd made it there basically in time. You'd had the fight, the big confrontation, then winding your way out of the sewers and everything. And so it is early, so there are not a lot of people around you as you emerge.
I know that it should probably smell better now, but we stink so badly that I can't even tell.
All right, Lou, lead the way home, please.
Wait, Bartleby, how are we getting our stuff before we part ways? Because we fucking earned it.
So he finishes, you know, crawling out of like the manhole cover. And the whole time, you know, this spellbook has been, this woman made out of paper has been like clinging to his back, is like still held around his neck, kind of like a cape. She still is there, and she, you know, he sets her down on the ground and she makes no sound other than like a, you know, turning a page as she rests there. And he pats at his, you know, at his like waistcoat and pulls out a red silk satchel and hands it to you, Lou. Keep the bag as a tip.
She just kind of like goes to like put it in her bag and opens it and it's just like filled with poop water. And she's like, mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'll hold it. Mm-hmm.
So the red bag, immediately as you touch it, you can feel. So apparently, I was doing some research in D&D. Whenever you hold an item, a magic item, you can tell it's magic. So you instantly get the feeling, like the tingly feeling that, oh, this bag is magical. And it's very small. It's like the size of a coin purse, right? So you have no idea, like, is this supposed to be what it is? Is it what?
Are you being a kind and benevolent DM?
I am. Right now, giving you a bag of holding because you're level 4 now, everybody. Oh, shit. We forgot to cover our level stuff. Well, we'll cover it in a bit. But yeah, so you're level 4 now. I figured it's time to give you all a bag of holding. So
thank you. And I hope you and your lady friends have a fine evening.
Oh, yes. I'm Index. It's a pleasure to meet all of you. Thank you for saving me. Wow, that was intense.
How did you wind up kidnapped in the first place?
Oh, well, I actually don't sort of know. And she's looking at Bartleby, who's looking at her and kind of makes like a no head shake gesture. And he says, as I mentioned previously, there's been a bit of a turf war happening between my people and the sovereign courts. So they took her as an act of retribution. But they will pay for it. With tonight, of course. But in other ways as well. And his eyes just seem to get really red all of a sudden as he says this.
Tonight?
Oh, yes. Well, you did kill one of the courtiers. It's
It's certainly a big deal. It's not something that people do lightly. I'm sure the sovereign will take note. Perhaps think again about sending his courtiers to my city.
Whew.
Yeah, Aoife just kind of like sucks on her bottom lip and just sort of nods slowly, thinking after hearing this aloud, has definitely the look on her face of, oh boy, what did we get involved with?
Yeah.
What were those rules of coven again?
Well, we're not in coven.
You're not in coven, so.
What happens out of coven stays out of coven.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, apparently there's a sovereign who might be mad that you killed one of. They're basically like lieutenants are the courtiers. It's like a very small, you know, handpicked set of agents who control lots of other fae. So the Duke of Pudding was one such individual.
That's a problem for us tomorrow.
That's tomorrow. But anyway, I do appreciate what you did here, and I'm pleasantly surprised with the results. Other than the unpleasant exit, it was quite a performance. So, if you're ever in the market for anything at all, you know where to find me.
I like you. You're simple, straightforward, much easier to work with.
That's what I'm saying. Fiends over fae any day. Personal motto of mine. And he pulls out from another of these pouches, I guess you assume, this hat that he had on before, you know, and he gives it like a noir, you know, detective flip, and then puts it back on his head, and you see his features go, you know, stony, like chiseled jaw, Eldrin man, and he offers his arm to Index, and they stroll off into the night. So you want to walk of shame through the streets of Chaussiana back to
worse than any walk of shame I've ever done, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you smell like crap, literally, as you're moving through the streets. Yeah, making your way back. So the walk will take you all about 20 minutes or so. So we're going to arrive there, but I did totally forget at the beginning of this episode to talk about level 4 stuff. So before we like dive into the rest of the action, we need to do that real quick. We heard about Aoife's in our one-on-one episode, but real quick, you know, you all are feeling so much stronger and more capable as you are on your walk. So Nassim, why don't you tell us what's up with Tony? Level 4 stuff, new stuff.
Tony is keeping her friends close and took up the sentinel feat.
Cool.
So that I get to hit a creature with an attack of opportunity, or when I hit a creature with an attack of opportunity, their speed is reduced to 0 for the rest of their turn.
Damn.
I get attack of opportunity when they disengage. Mm. And if y'all are within 5 feet of me, I can react once you are hit. If you are hit with a melee attack, I get to hit them with a melee attack.
No, stay right here. That's great for you with
friend.
all your other features. That super scales totally well. Yeah, rad.
That's it.
Solid though. That's it. What's your new HP total?
48. Ooh. Which is great because my AC is now 12.
Gotta
get me a new shield.
Yeah. Get you some magic junk. And Katie, what about Lou? What do we get level 4?
I did something far less exciting and gave myself 2 points in dexterity.
Well,
what could you do? You know? So now I'm at a 19, so I gotta start looking at feats that give you +1 to dexterity for level 8. But it is nice because now my armor class is 15 and my to hit is +6. So
yeah. I mean, dex is so good for rogues. It's
so,
like, it's hard not to.
Why would I do anything else?
Yeah.
It's everything.
The choice is clear. Sick. All right. So you're reflecting on these choices and, you know, what you have learned in your journeys as you walk home the 20 minutes and you make it back to Bucutini. And you can see that obviously the door is closed. The closed sign is out. The curtains have been drawn, but there are still some of the lights inside because you probably closed only about an hour ago or so. So you know that, you know, wait staff is still in there breaking things down, cleaning and setting up for opening tomorrow. But you have a key, obviously.
When we get in there, we just need to go straight upstairs because we are absolutely a health hazard. Like, completely, we're disgusting. So just don't make eye contact and go.
Just look down, look at your feet, look at your boots. So you open up the door and, you know, the bell, the happy little bell goes off. And people just give you kind of a cursory glance and they see it's you, obviously, Lou. And they go back to, you know, folding, rolling napkins, silverware for tomorrow, like wiping down, mopping, you know, all the chairs are flipped up and everybody's just moving about. So you are not impeded at all as you make your way up the stairs and open up the door to the main apartment. And as you step inside, you know, you move into your family living room that's full of overstuffed furniture and a million things on the walls. You see that there are two people up. Frida is sitting on the couch, kind of like a quilted blanket over her lap. And next to her is a very uncomfortable looking Rook, who looks way better than she did before. She looks like, I mean, she looks tired for sure. She's been through something harrowing, but like all the black eye and like bruises and cuts and everything on her body seems to be gone. And she also does look a little bit older. It was hard to tell because last time you saw her, she was like 16-ish, you could guess, but her face was so damaged. Like it was hard to really pick everything out. But now it's, yeah, definitely. She's older. And yeah, just holding like a ball of yarn for Frida right now. And as you step in the door, she goes, "Oh, you're back." "Great. Frida, this has been just wonderful, but I have to go. I really have to." And she's trying to like shove the yarn back into Frida's hand, who's like keeping it in her lap, and they're kind of squabbling over. And Frida's like, "Ah, yes. How did it go? How is everything? You look like hell. You smell like hell, actually. Whoa."
Yeah, I mean, we're alive, so that's always good, right? It went well.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, good. No, we can finish this in a minute. You go.
Thank you.
Go down the hall. Bye, Ma. No, you keep holding that. Rook is stuck there. Goes to pouty face on the couch while she's still holding the yarn.
Yeah, so I think we go, there's probably like one giant like tub room that they have. And since we do have some extra funds for a couple nice things, there's definitely like a spout that will give us indoor plumbing to like fill the tub. And I do so, and I put all of the expensive bath salts in there.
Everything we need, it all. Everything we got.
Yeah, Aoife will just start not being able to stand like another bloody second of being just crusty. We'll grab like, you know, like mop buckets, and we'll, you know, fill them up with some like hot soap and water so she can just start like scrubbing on the floor.
Yeah.
I think we need to call this episode Krusty.
Krust or no crust?
Oh, God. Yeah, Lou just immediately is, like, naked. Like, cannot get out of those clothes fast enough. She's just
Burn them.
Yeah, we'll never wear them again.
I think the sombrero has lived its life.
That's why I warned you.
It's gone now.
You didn't listen. You're like, "It'll be cute." I was like, "I know. It'll die. It'll die." Okay. Yeah. You can absolutely huck that into like the garbage pile. Anything else you are saying or doing, or just like, you just like want to get clean as soon as possible.
That's it. Yeah. That's the goal.
That's probably, yeah, numero uno. After that, then we can have a conversation.
A little bit of self-care.
I could not imagine speaking about anything in this state. Yeah. I can't even believe we said hello to my mom. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I really wish she hadn't been awake, but of course she's awake. You've actually never seen her sleep, Lou, so.
She's got too many things to worry about, too many babies.
Yeah, so you can all get clean and you start feeling, you know, humanoid again once everything is nice. And I don't know, do you have jammies or like did you bring like robes or anything with you? Or you just like got out of the
Frida
house?
Frida has stuff for us.
Yeah, Frida will. If you don't have anything, she'll, you know, she's got so many kids and people who come in and out, and you know, she's always helping other people, and so there's a whole wardrobe of strange bits and bobs, you know, laid out for you.
I'm wearing one of Lou's like old childhood crop top tees, and it's like a fitted baby tee on Tony.
My muscles, my giant shoulders.
That's hot.
Great. So yeah, you all get suited up and stuff. And what do you all want to do? Apparently, Frida and Rook are sitting in the living room still, but.
I think for Rook's mental health, we should immediately give her a lowdown before. Yeah, rescue her and give her the lowdown of everything that's happened.
Yeah, and you come back in the room and Rook looks at you, you know, with the captured, like, help me eyes, and says, Frida, again, this has been so great, but I really, you know, they're my team, you know, and I gotta just check. So I'm gonna, you know, and Frida's just like smiling into the yarn, like, all right, just promise me you won't run off in the night. Let's at least have breakfast together before we all part ways, okay? Loopy.
I promise.
Okay.
Oh man, I can't wait to taste whatever your mama's got cooking. If it's anything like her daughter.
She reaches out and just grabs your cheek again. And she's like, I don't trust. Oh,
you. Love her.
You. Love this. All right. Well, good night, everybody. I guess I'll go to bed and I'll see you in the morning. Bright and early. Really early.
Aoife's already groaning like, why? No.
Restaurant life. Really early. She pats you. Sympathetically on the shoulder before disappearing into one of the hallways. But yeah, Rook will turn towards you all wild-eyed, like, okay, I caught some of what you were doing, but something with a demon and and you're not dead, so that's great. Okay, good start.
We got the ingredients in order to do the bonding ritual with the house, and we also got 200 gold, so bonus!
Great. Great. Surprisingly, great. Okay. Great.
We may have pissed off some people in the Shadow Court in the process.
The Slytherin Court?
Slytherin Court in the process of getting this stuff, but...
Wait, there were... I don't think you mentioned there were Fae involved? There were Fae involved in this?
Seems like there's always Fae involved.
It's a wild story, so... We go down to where Lude's sister is a performer and a club called Soul, and it's run by this really nice gentleman who is apparently a fiend named Mr. B. And Mr. B knows all about the house, knew everything about the ritual, and was the one who ended up paying us the required ingredients, and knows quite a bit about you. It appears he's a knowledge demon.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. You had me really freaked out there for a second. I'm sorry. You know this guy? Your sister works for this guy?
Apparently. It's new. I don't know. She sings at his club.
Okay. And where do the Fae come in?
So apparently the Slytherin Court and Mr. B got into some kind of tiff. And they took his living spellbook. And so we, in as payment for getting the ingredients that we needed, agreed to escort him onto to this meeting, which was with the Duke of Pudding, and we killed him. And she, like, purses her lips, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she kind of stares at you for a minute and sort of mimics your expression, and then goes... So, you killed a courtier of the Slytherin Court?
Was that?
Really? And you didn't die?
Aren't you proud? And what is the Slytherin Court doing in some mortal city?
I don't know if proud is the right word. It, shock is true, and I guess sort of
impressed,
honestly,
at least.
I really can't believe you're alive right now in front of me. That is absolutely true, but I'm not surprised about the Slytherin Court. I mean, they're basically the only sovereign court that has, I mean, they have agents everywhere. But anyway, I'm sorry. I'm fucking sorry I wasn't there to help, and I'm glad you're not dead.
Saved our lives.
If you would have seen yourself.
You got the hair, right?
Yeah, from your hand.
Yeah, and, you know, thanks also for that. I know you could have just left me, and you probably should have, but you didn't, and that's very nice of you. Thank you. She kind of whispers. You know, the thank you trails off into quiet babbling, sort of.
Hey, don't worry about it. You have been taking care of us since we met you. We're happy to help you.
I know I haven't always been the easiest to deal with, so I appreciate that.
Let's just, this is clearly making you terribly uncomfortable, so let's just say, friends, you're welcome, thank you, and move on.
Okay. That sounds good. I don't have a lot of experience doing that, but that sounds great. Okay.
Speaking on friendly terms, now that you're better, though, I do think that we have a few questions for you.
Yeah, that seems fair. Okay. Yeah, should I? I'll just, and you, are you, like, in the living room right now, or are you, like...
If she's more comfortable, we can go to Lou's room. She doesn't want to be, like, out in a common area.
Yeah, she would have followed you wherever you all eventually led her, so...
We're all in a giant king-size bed, then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she'll look around the room then and, like, find a chair, kind of scoot over to you all sitting on the bed, and sits down in it, and looks sternly, like, ready.
Yeah, Aoife... like, sitting, like, on the, towards the back of Lou's bed, has, like, sort of hunched over a pillow that she's holding in her lap with her, like, her head propped up on top, and she says, well, I guess to start with, your sister Tandy says hi, and she says that she misses you.
What?
Yeah, there's a big shock around the whole room, and Rook says, how did... that come up? Does Tandy know? Did you tell Tandy about me? You said you wouldn't.
I didn't. I didn't tell her that we knew you. But when I was headed into the back of the house, I saw a portrait of you and her together hanging up on the walls, and I asked her about who she was to you. And I said, oh, that's nice. Should I ever run into your sister, I'll be sure to pass on your love.
And Rook, she does. She has her hands, like, on her face. You know, she's kind of rubbing her face, trying to process this. And there's a lot of different emotions moving over her face. But she sort of lands on a steeled, almost like a trying not to... She's trying not to be emotional about it when she says, I'm glad she's doing well, but... if you don't mind, I would very much like to not let Tandy know what has happened to me and where I am. I think she's safer if she doesn't know.
Oh, sure. I mean, she was definitely very sympathetic, and she had said that, you know, she always knew that you were a different one and just wanted the best for you, but of course.
Since things have changed, it's just easier not to.
I mean, but you looked like a dryad, and but you're mortal, as she, like, motions up and down Rook's body, like, this is not Treebark.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a fae once, and I am not anymore.
Lou reaches under her pillow and grabs a flask that she knows is there, and she passes it over to Rook.
Oh, thank God. She's like, swigs it back.
Are you cursed?
No. I wish it was a curse, because then I could do something about it, right? Or anything, but nope. This was just all my fault.
Oh, girl, you got to start from page one. I just thought there was one thing going on, but you were a dryad, and now you're a human, but also you're aging for some reason, and also you're not talking to your sister, which is just sad. I mean, she's not really my kind of person, but that's your sister.
Yeah, yep, that's a good summary of everything.
Look, you don't have to tell us the whole story now. We'll save you that, but I mean, is it something that we should be worried about? Like, are you going to grow to be 110 days and then turn into a baby and, like, be a phoenix? Like, what?
Your imagination knows no bounds, my god.
You know, I wish I could say that's not exactly what happens, but that's very similar to exactly what happens. Let's just say I age a year every single day, and I'm new to all of this, so there have only been a couple of times where that transition happens, but it's not something I care to involve other people in. Because it's painful and disgusting. So that's that. And one of the reasons you should never go in my room. So, and also one of the reasons why I needed you all, because I can't do this by myself, obviously, because there are times when I will be useless. And in those times, I have made a lot of enemies and I'm vulnerable. That's one of the reasons it's just safer for me not to ever see Tandy again. If people know what happened and they know I get into these moments, there's nothing I can do. And again, like I said, it's all my fault. I brought this on myself. I wanted to be mortal. And that's what the Weird Sisters gave me. Mortality, lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes of it.
What did you give them? Is that just what they got? A big joke? Ruining your life with it? Or did they get something out of it other than that?
I paid my price. This was just a fun side bonus. But that's why you have to really, really be careful. Or on them, or on the Fae.
What's the oldest you've gotten to? Is it always the same year? Or?
I've only been through it twice now. One time it was 98. Another it was 104. So I don't know.
What are you eating? 104 in this day and age?
I don't know.
What's your workout routine?
I don't really know how it works, okay? That's also part of why this is so fucking hard. And, like, I've never been human before, right? And it's ridiculous. And hormones and feelings and your whole body is just taken over all the time by, and you're always hungry or tired or you have to poop and like, why is it like this? And she's freaking out and tears are streaming down her face and she's not like crying, she's just like emoting all over the place.
Well, for us it's all exciting because it only happens once, but if it keeps happening and you're not really working up to something, I could see how it's less exciting.
Yeah, no shit.
Well, we got your back, at least.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, if this is gonna work, if this is all gonna keep working, there are just gonna have to be times where I'm just not around.
So, logistically, when you're a baby, should we just take care of you? Like, I've changed a lot of diapers in
my
time.
No, I absolutely do not want you to see me or I will go away and I will deal with that. Because that is not something that I do not want anyone close to me to see me like that.
I just want to set the expectations now. I think it's really important. Honestly, if we want to make a list of rules and, like, hang them up in the kitchen, that would just be great for me.
She has the expression of, like, a teenager who's, like, about to get the sex talk right now. Like, that is the like, level of discomfort she is expressing around this whole situation.
I mean, it seems like you have some sort of system worked out for when you're doing that.
Yep.
So,
and I would really care not to be have anyone be involved in that. Nope. Do you know how horrific it is from going to be a cool, badass fae that's thousands of years old to being a screaming, shitting little kid? And you remember everything. You fucking remember everything.
I don't know. I think that I would want people that I can trust around to help me deal with that.
No, I can deal with it myself. That's nothing new. At least that hasn't changed.
Well, the offer still stands, but you're free to accept it if you like.
But anyway, luckily now I'm kind of back at full capacity, so we've got another 50 good days. Whatever.
We should do something fun before they run out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that you've probably done much more than us. You're, like, super old. Like, I'm old. Not for an elf, but in general. But damn.
Yeah. Being immortal and then not being immortal is weird.
So if you've only gone through this a couple times, then it's only been, like, under a year?
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm not saying, like, get your hopes up or anything, but I don't know anything about this or magic in general. But who knows? Maybe we'll be able to figure something out in the long term. Get you back to how you were.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure there's still a lot to process about this. So, maybe now we should show you what we got from Bartleby. You can tell us what this ritual involves.
Yeah, that'd be, she kind of smiles at you gratefully, Tony. That would be great. What'd you get?
And the bell from the Carillon, we buried that a couple hours outside of Chasiana, because we thought if the Carillon made this and we had it, we could probably use it to track us, and so we wanted to ditch it.
It was a good call. I'm sure Whistler already knows where it is.
Oh, it feels good to have you say that, because while we were making that decision, we had no fucking clue what to do for real.
And those things are wildly powerful artifacts, you know, handmade for each Carillon. Of course, they have all kinds of magical sensors and scrying, and I'm sure that's exactly why he left it. Good. You're more sensible than I assumed. That's good.
Always with the backhanded compliments. Mm. My God.
Kind of starting to like it.
You know what? I kind of lost some ground here tonight, so I feel like I can have one, she says.
Sure, you can have a couple.
I can have one. Yeah, let me get in there. Just like one. Thanks. Thanks. Come on, what's in the bag?
And then Lou just like pulls out this little red bag and she's like, okay, I think I know what this is. They sell these a lot in Chasiana. And she like digs her arm and she's like, oh yeah, woo-hoo! Totally.
My arm goes all the way in. You're like, bag of holding, extra planar space, fuck yeah. So for those of you listening who don't know, a bag of holding is basically, it's a bag that, you know, it appears like a normal human-sized bag, but it has a huge extra-dimensional amount of space inside it. So bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. Great for storing all your bullshit during adventures.
I will pull out all the junk, because I don't actually know what it is. It was, like, a really weird ingredients.
Yeah, so as you, like, yeah, dig around inside, there's nothing in the pouch except for, it's, like, a wooden crate, maybe the size of a shoebox. So you can pull that out, and all the, you know, stuff is apparently inside in the size of the shoebox. And as you slide it open, there seem to be a couple of these, like, orange, almost rust-colored, like, very lumpy candles that have a very weird smell. There are, like, golden needles inside, and some herbs that have been, like, you know, put in, like, little baggies and very neatly labeled. Everything is very neatly labeled with, like, stickers and, you know, Ziploc bag, like, fantasy Ziploc bags. So Bard of Lee has clearly arranged this all very nicely for you. And the only thing inside, they all look pretty mundane, but the weirdest thing in there is like a glass vial with a stopper. And you can see there are very long white silver threads that are very, very fine. They look almost like hair that have been coiled up inside this tube.
Not this again.
Yeah, sounds like hair? It's yeah, the weird sister's hair, maybe?
It's long, it's silvery, mm-hmm. It's white.
Maybe it's that granny's hair of the person who owned the chicken hut before.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
I was thinking hag hair, yeah.
And Rook looks over everything and, wow, yeah, looks like it's all here. That's great. I mean, you did kill a courtier, so that feels about right. But, you know, it's good, you know, having a demon you can trust, I guess. That's useful.
I wouldn't say trust. Everyone's nice to you when you have something they want.
Yeah, that's
at least is a fair. Makes a fair, straightforward deal.
Mm. Yeah, that is nice. Yeah.
Whose hair is that?
You know, I actually don't. I just have the spell, right? I got it in a book when I got the house, sort of like a user manual thing. So I'm actually not. I think it was like some. Very long name of a mythical creature, and it is definitely the most expensive thing, so that's good. Actually, yeah, you're like a wizard, kind of, right? And she points at you, Aoife.
And Aoife kind of shrugs.
Yeah, I've never actually done it.
Sure, yeah.
So...
Oh, how are you bonded to the house, then?
Well, the hag...
You didn't have to do this?
She bonded me to the house when I got the house, so... It has to be the owner, you know, transferring. So, and I was never much of a, I don't know, a nerd. So I don't really know how to.
But like crosses her arms and looks really offended at being called a nerd.
You know, the books and the.
And she just, she's just like, and she gestures with her hand, like, annoyed, like, pass me everything, I'll read the instructions.
I mean, they're hidden in the house.
I'm just not
so
as smart as I am, okay?
Don't worry about it, but it's good that we have that, so when we go back, we should absolutely do that before we go wherever we need to go next. Probably back to Coven, right? Unless, I guess we actually have to get a bounty.
Yeah. I mean, we got some money, but that doesn't also do us much good when we're in Coven, so.
Right. Yeah, is Aoife going, I'm waking up for a reason because Tony let you all know that Tony had a sweet dream and has, from the Weird Sisters,
yeah.
That Rook has not been informed about.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh.
It was like, hey, come pick me up from this party, I don't want to be... Weird Sisters are like, hey, whenever you have a minute.
They said, we want
to
call in a favor, so come back here and bring all your little friends, is what they had said in that dream where they made you go smack out KO'd on the floor of Lou's kitchen. Yeah, so Rook is looking at you, Aoife, going, boop, 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 and she's like, what?
Yeah,
I was kind of knocked out for a second and contacted by the Weird Sisters asking me to return a favor along with all of you.
I forgot about that for a hot second.
But fun fact, I have a favor from the Mistress of Silks and Coven, so, you know... We get some, we pay some back, we clear our debts.
That's not good. You should know. Did you not hear what I just told you? No favors ever with them. Don't do that. Just don't do that.
It wasn't, okay, listen, I understand this now. But I...
What did you take from them? What did they give you?
They gave me, first of all... knowledge of a illegal animal racing ring in the what like the catacombs of some city, and also run by the Slytherin court, and they were torturing their animals. Like, I had to stop that.
So they just knew this was something you wanted to do, and they... when did you talk to them?
They came to me. One of them came to me in my sleep. I thought it was a dream. I don't really know what was happening.
But that is not good.
They showed me this vision of this horse, this alicorn. They came in a dream? And it was beautiful, and it was in pain.
A dream when you were asleep?
Yeah.
That's not good. Okay. Okay, they're calling in a favor. A favor? Wait, how many favors do you owe them? She's, like, at you, like, at your shoulders, Tony, like, looking at you with her very intense eyes. Moment.
Well, when I was there to help the creature,
they
also provided me with 2.
Fuck! I'm unconscious for 1 day! 1 fucking day! Alright, okay, that's... okay, so we... alright.
And look how much we managed to do!
And get into, yeah, it's amazing!
I saved a life.
Okay, this, you know what, alright, that, you know, this is fine. I'm sure it'll be fine, and I'm sure they won't want us to do anything that might lose a life, right? I'm sure it'll all work out in the cosmic balance, because that's what Fae love, balance. They love when everybody gets a fair deal. That's so true. She slaps her hand, like, on her knee, for emphasis.
Rook, take another gulp of that booze, because at this point we can't do anything other than pay them back. So whatever happens, we just gotta try to minimize damage.
Right. Okay.
Should we burn the hair that you recovered? We weren't sure what to do with our hair because we were trying to make sure you're still alive. Should we, like, burn it? Do we, like, throw it away?
Yeah, I mean, as long as you have it back now, that's the important thing. You can, I mean, certainly don't just throw it out in the world again. You know, just once you throw it away, right? Once you choose to get rid of it, it's a choice you make. You're not giving it. It loses all its power. So now you can throw it away. You can burn it. Do whatever you want. It won't matter. It's not the object. It's the way it happens. It's all very complicated. But I guess okay. I'm gonna Right. I'm going to try to do better because we can't have this happening. She points at you, Tony. Like, that's so bad.
I hear you.
And I'm not, okay, and I do realize I'm not the greatest teacher in the world, but I'm a human trying to think the Fae and trying to talk to other humans, which is something I just really don't have a lot of experience with, right? So I'm also learning, but wow. This is high stakes game. Everybody. So tomorrow we'll wake up and I guess we'll do breakfast with that woman who lives here.
You can call her mom.
She's your mom?
Yeah.
Okay.
The family resemblance is the kindness in our eyes.
Hey, you've got weird shit going on in your life. You have no...
I changed creature type, so, like, I get that. I don't understand mortals. Okay, that's a mortal issue, I guess. Okay, so we'll have breakfast with your mom, and then we will go and see what the weird sisters want. But on the way, before that, we're going to bond you all to the house in case this shit happens again. And then I will answer questions and we will, there are books probably in the house that will help you learn things so you don't die.
Brilliant.
Gordon will be so displeased.
Yes, well, Gordon can suck it, so... That's
fucking true.
I'm kind of warmed up to him, personally. He's a little bit psycho, but there's something about him.
I'm really worried about your dating life.
I don't like that. Yeah, I don't like that you feel that way. Okay, that's fine. I guess you can talk to him. He's going to like you even less now after the bonding thing, so because he'll have to do what you say. So just be prepared for that.
But that means we get to command the house, right?
Yes. Oh, but yes, you
joyride.
But it is clear that you all still work for me. Yes, like that. I am in charge.
So. Yeah, but like you said, there's times when you're not going to be around. No.
I will leave instructions for where.
Oh, like when you're bleeding on the couch. All right, good to know. And she kind of gives her, like, a playful, like, slap in the air at her.
You know what? I'm going to go to sleep, and we will talk about this tomorrow. And she gets up, and she, like, takes all the stuff in the bag, and is like, I'm going to hold this.
They say laughter is the best medicine.
Nope, I'm holding this. Good night. Good night. I'm fine. And you hear, like, a door open and close down there, and she's like, actually, Lou, where am I staying? I don't actually know.
I mean,
your house.
You guys can all stay in here, and or you could sleep on one of the couches if you want, but people might be coming in and out. I'm gonna go share Lark's room so that you guys have more space.
I'll sleep on the couch.
Mom wakes up really early. She will need somebody to help with breakfast, so just prepare yourself.
Just like a banshee sound from down the hall, and Rook disappears, leaving you all to yourselves.
All right, well, if you need anything, I'm down the hall, two doors to the right. So, sleep tight.
Yeah, good night, everyone. Let's pass the fuck out now.
Hey, venturers, you've made it to the mid-roll. We've been dropping a lot of truth this episode, so let's keep the ball rolling with some updates. For those of you keeping an eye on the Venture Maidens campaign guide, I've got great news! As of a few days ago, the community version of the Venture Maidens campaign guide PDF is live. If you backed the Kickstarter, make sure to check your email or head to the Kickstarter page to grab your copy of the sweet, sweet initial version of the book. Though this copy is far from the final version, it gives you a glorious preview of all 230 pages of the dang thing. The community copy will be available until June 30th, 2022, and in the meantime, we invite you to read the content, playtest the content, and please, please let us know your feedback. This is the time to catch any typos, point out anything you find confusing, overpowered, unaccessible, etc. You can provide feedback via the Google form sent out on the Kickstarter. Hop in to our Discord to provide feedback in the campaign guide channels, specifically on the Discord, or submit playtest feedback via the Google form on our Discord. We want to make it super easy to get your thoughts and make this book the best it can be. After the June 30th, 2022 date, we'll no longer be accepting feedback, as we will be starting our final editing and layout pass. After that, we'll be releasing the true final PDF. As of now, we're expecting that final PDF to go out to backers in late July or early August. And once it's in backer hands, it will be available for general sale on the 2C Gaming and the Venture Maidens websites. So go, go, go to check out all the glorious stuff we have been up to and let us know your thoughts. Other than that, I just want to say thank you so much for the continued support and for sticking with us through some podcast posting delays. As you might imagine, getting this book out the door has been an all-consuming labor of love, but we are thrilled to be giving it every bit of love and detail that you all deserve. So until next time, make sure to follow us on social media everywhere at Venture Maidens to stay up to date on the latest news, come on down to join our wonderful Discord community, throw a couple of bucks at the Patreon, leave a rating and review, and of course, never forget to venture away. All right, kids, I'll let you get back to the episode, and I'll catch up with you next time. So you all go to sleep, and it's all great. And you are very tired after a very long day of adventuring and traveling and everything. So I imagine it is not too hard for you all to go to sleep. Lou, as you do, you know, you post up in Lark's room somewhere around 3 a.m., you know, in the middle of your trance, you hear a door opening and, you know, the clicky clacky of very tall shoes come in and, you know, as they get like thrown off and you feel, you know, your sister's arm like gets thrown around your side. And she, you know, at some point she's like, "Good night, Loopy," and kisses your face a whole bunch. You can roughly smell like champagne and, you know, cigarette smoke from a club. But that passes through your trance like.
She's just like, but cuddles in a little bit too.
Yeah. Yeah. And Lou, what are you meditating on this evening in your trance? Is there anything particular that's happening with you? Just trying to quiet your mind.
Yeah, she's definitely, normally she like thinks about all of like her family and friends that like soothe her. I think like being home and like being in her room has kind of like unsettled her after she had like all those strong memories. So she's just trying to clear her brain.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're sort of like fighting, yeah, to get that calm, that centering with everything that's been happening and being back. And it's just all so strange. Your life is so different and it's only been 7 days, but it feels like an eternity at this point. And as you're, you know, drifting through and like, you know, thinking about those quieting exercises, those meditative moments, maybe even those sounds, you know, that you always go to when you go to that meditation place, and you start to hear something. It's very dreamy. It's very musical. And you realize you're kind of processing this sound before you consciously realize it. It's that song that you had heard from that silvery giant thing. It now seems like so long ago, that song of that creature that you saved from that bell. And you realize as you're listening to it and focusing on it, something about your consciousness has shifted again. And you realize, I'm dreaming. It was like that same thing that happened to you. You're falling back into that exact same thing that happened to you back at that camp when you had your first dream ever, as you're listening to this song. And it's lulling you into whatever this confusing state is as an elf. And the sound and everything, the consciousness starts to form images around you. And you find yourself in this place, this unfamiliar place, but something about it is comforting. It's a greenhouse you're seeing around you. There's lots of sunlight that's coming down and through, but it's nice and diffused through these smoky panels of glass on the wall, so it's not uncomfortable to your dark elf eyes. And all around you, you can see that there are tons of plants in this space, and they're all different fruits and like herbs and vegetables and all edible things, ingredients you recognize, and some of them you don't, but they all look very exciting and fresh. And as you swing your head around and take in the space, you realize you're not alone. That giant, that impossibly huge giant from before, is standing by you, and they shouldn't fit in the space, but they do as they're looking at you. And again, they don't really have a mouth or anything, but you can tell they're smiling at you in this space. And the giant offers you a hand. Do you take it?
I think she like pauses for a second, not trusting the dream, and she like logics with herself, I helped this fae creature, so I can take something from it. And so she'll reach out her hand and meet its.
Yeah. And as you do, and again, because the being's body, it was like made of this compacted mist, right? So you're not really expecting to encounter much or solid flesh as you reach out, but you feel the palm land, you know, your tiny palm and its giant one as it takes your hand and begins to lead you, you know, around the paths in this winding greenhouse. And every corner holds just some other delightful thing or something. You're like, oh, that yellow, that looks so good in a curry. Or like, oh, that smell, like, oh, I could make a million things with that. It's just, it's very exciting. And the whole time the giant is speaking to you. It's not words, it's those melodic notes of the song, which you don't understand, but it's okay, you know, in dream logic as you're moving through, and it's so it continues to talk to you. And it winds around until you come to the center of this greenhouse where there is this tree that is just sprouting out from the ground, and it's huge and beautiful, the most green and like vibrant leaves you've ever seen. And there are like hundreds of different multicolored fruits hanging from its branches. And the giant takes its hand out of yours and offers its hands, like, to lift you up, to give you a boost, so you can reach some of the fruit up above.
Yeah, she'll, like, brace herself with her arms and, like, hike herself up.
Yeah.
And do its speaking.
Yeah, and you do, and you're standing on mist, right? It's like standing on clouds, and there's that moment in the dream where you're like, whoa, and you realize, you know, how weird this is and how delightful. And the giant lifts you slowly, slowly up so you can, you know, filter through the branches here. And there are so many different things. What is Dream Lou looking for?
I think she's looking for, like, that one special ingredient that she could use to make her food stand out in two realms.
Oh yeah, dude.
why maybe more? I don't know. And so I think that, you know, she's like looking through, and as she like goes through the branches, she's keeping an eye out for some kind of fruit, but with like a taste in mind in her head.
Mm-hmm.
As she like passes things, she is like smelling too, like with her whole body, just trying to find that it ingredient.
Yeah, and you are pushing through, and so many interesting things are passing you by, but you're like, no, that's not quite it. That's not quite it. And you're like, I know if I keep looking, I'm gonna find something that I'm supposed to find. Is the sense, I think, that is going through. And you push and you push, you know, and impossibly long, you know, you're digging in this tree, though you're just standing in one place. And as you move your hands towards the latest grasp, you feel something odd, something wooden. And it's not a branch, it's almost manufactured, and it's different than anything you've been finding so far. And as you reach, you can kind of get a hold of it. It feels like a canister of some kind. Do you want to pull it towards you?
Sure, yeah.
And as you do, you reach and you pull this thing, and from the branches you see something. It's not a fruit. It's not anything that should be growing on this tree. It looks like a wooden cage, almost like a little bird cage. And inside it, there are two people. You see Tony, and you see Rook. Tiny versions of them, like, in this cage. And you can see they're, like, holding at the bars and, like, yelling. Like, pounding at it for somebody to let them out.
Oh. She kind of, like, looks backwards towards the thing. She's like, I'm gonna let them out. I'm not gonna eat them, just so you know.
And the giant Yeah, the giant stops singing and nods ahead in agreement, like it understands.
This isn't one I asked for, but okay. Dreams are fucking weird. And she just kind of like tries to find like an opening on the cage. And if she can't find one, she'll just start pulling at the top to try to break it.
Yeah, yeah. And there is like a little, you know, a latch with like a golden decorative lock, you know, on the front. And you're like, oh, it's like those things that could like hold a preteen girl's diary closed. You're like, whatever, like child's play, you know, as you go. And you just like rip this thing off, you know, and so the door flies open and there's this flash of golden light. And both, you know, little Rook and little Tony shoot out of this cage, and they turn into these golden birds that flutter out into the greenhouse. And the vision, everything around you, starts to fade into darkness as this is all going away and all kind of melting away. And there's a voice that you hear. And it's not a voice you've ever heard before. But it says, "Do you know what kind of bird this is, Lou? Remember its name. The name is important." And you, like, wake up with the, whoa, as you come out of the dream. And you're back. You're awake. And, you know, it's morning. You can hear people walking around in the kitchen. And there's a sound of a glass marble rolls along the floor at your feet.
Just gonna reach down and snatch it up and, like, peer at it.
Fucking identical to, like, that other one you have with nothing in it. You can, like, hold them side by side, identical, those empty marbles.
Son of a bitch. Oh. I hate dreams. Why aren't they literal? That would be so much easier. And she, like, puts that extra ball in her pocket. And she kind of, like, looks over to see if Lark is still there.
Lark is there in the pillow. Clearly didn't, like, wash off any makeup or anything, so, like, has that trail, you know, the mascara on the white pillowcloth, and she's sort of drooling a little bit, and, like, the too much hairspray has now made her hair, like, sort of jagged and strange. And as you shift, she's like, no, no, get off. Okay. No, no, God. Slaps at you.
Yeah, so Lou just kind of gets out of bed and takes all the blankets and just, like, shoves it on top of her face.
And you hear from underneath at some point, but then quiet.
And she's gonna tiptoe out of her room to the common area. Kind of, like, gonna ease her way over to any kind of, like, book situation. I'm sure we have, like, a reading nook or something, and just be kind of, like, looking for nature books, because she's like, we're gonna make this make sense, because yeah. Dreams are stupid.
What the fuck? What the fuck was that? Yeah. And it's so unlike your trance stuff, where it's like, it's always you, it's always in control, and you're like, what the hell?
Yeah. Ugh, I love being in control. Yeah. This is terrible.
And this is awful. Why people do this every night? This is horrible. Yeah, so you can start looking, and you're, like, trying to find anything you have on birds, and you're like, oh no, it's just, you're trying your best. And then we come over to, so Tony and Aoife, what are you all doing? It sounds like people are starting to clatter around down below. And you hear, you know, the creak of a door. From further down, so maybe Lou's up or someone else.
This is morning now? Mm-hmm. Ooh, I'm ready and well rested. Mm-hmm. She slept hard and is ready for this breakfast.
Hell yeah. Anything for you, Aoife? How are you feeling?
Oh, she feels like ass. She does her... Yeah, she does her typical thing where she just waits until to be in bed until the absolute last possible moment.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. And so it comes, it happens, you know, when finally there's, like, a sound of, you know, a wooden spoon on a pipe down below that Lou, you would recognize as, like, a get the hell up breakfast time. You know, the echoing that just comes right up through the floorboards into the common area. That's a very clear sign that your mom is ready for you to be here. You haven't seen Rook either, okay. So you assume that maybe she got pulled into exactly what you thought she would.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lou is going to, like, really quickly, not finding anything, just kind of, like, write down what happened in her dream and kind of make a little sketch of the gold bird and just put it in her nightgown pockets, because you got to have pockets.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So we all rendezvous. We all head downstairs for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah. Yeah. And by
I'm already there.
Yeah, I'm already there. It's there. It's in my mouth. It's gone.
Stack in.
So yeah, you walk downstairs and There are a couple staff members who are already there. I mean, the business, it's open so long and you have so many friends and you're involved in so many other things. There are always people around. So you head downstairs already and like one of the largest tables, you know, in the front room has been covered with a nice tablecloth and plates are being set out. And sort of like up on the counter, you know, buffet style, there's like, you know, team meal that they have set up that, you know, restaurants will do early in the morning and just all kinds of delicious, you know, eggs and toast and fruits and everything you could want. Tea and coffee and pastries are laid out. And there's a very, very sleepy rook who is holding a thing of coffee and pouring it for people like a robot as... You know, she's staring off, blinking.
She's that soulless McDonald's employee.
Yeah, like you want more? Okay. She's refilling. You walk downstairs. She's like, coffee?
You need some, too. Here, I'll take a shift. You go sit down. Okay. Maybe I'll
pour. Wait, me first? I just need the image of her pouring me coffee in my head.
You have to chase the coffee a little bit, but you get it, like, in the mug. Yeah. And she's like, okay, yeah, I'll have something else. I'll sit down. Nice.
Should I put it directly in your mouth, or do you want a cup?
Oh, no. Okay. Oh, right. Cup. Yep. Good. And she gets it. Okay. And sits down. Yeah, and so Frida, you know, comes out and, like, dumps, you know, a big slather of gravy on something, on somebody's plate, and she's like, oh, yeah, my little babies, you were so cute sleeping. I let you sleep for an extra 30 minutes. Not that rook, though. She's spicy. I like her. And she, like, elbows you really hard in the ribs, Lou, so she gives you, like, eyebrows. Like her.
No.
No,
yeah,
really?
She's a good friend.
She's such a little spitfire.
She's such a little. Okay. Yeah, no, not for me. But thank you, Mom.
Well, you know, I'm just looking out for you. What about that Tony, though? She's. What about that? You have to pick, you know?
Tony's just like,
oh.
Perking up her ears off the side. She hears her name. What's that?
Living with these two babes.
Oh my God. Mom. And then she like lowers her voice a little bit. She's like, she's really good looking, but I don't think that our personalities mesh. So don't talk about it. Okay.
All right.
Sit down. Let me get you food.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I never sit down, but you can make me a plate. I'll be there. I'll be around. Okay. And she, you know, disappears into the back for a bit and is helping with other things. And
Lou makes a plate and she's like, she's never going to eat this.
She's never going to be back here. You've also never seen her eat. You've never seen her sleep and you've never seen her eat in like all the years you've been together.
It's ridiculous. It's just
no idea. But yeah, you all sit amidst, you know, the restaurant staff and other folks who are gathered here, and you can have a truly fucking excellent breakfast, which is exactly what you needed after a dungeon crawl and all the rapid traveling and the fear and just everything. It's been so much, and this is just so warming and lovely for you all. And Frida will eventually at some point pull up a stool, but the plate that you made her is cold and whatever. And she, you know, kind of pecks at it as she's talking to you. So you all just heading right out. I know you were kind of on a crunch. Is everything okay, Loopy? I wasn't able to hear much else other than what I told you yesterday, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, still keep an ear out for that crazy Corellin. You know, let us know if you hear literally anything. Who knows if it could be useful. He's a problem, but I think the rest I feel capable in handling.
Okay.
Hopefully. But I'll find a way to get in touch with you if anything comes up.
Well, you know, you all know, if you ever need anything. I'm here. Don't be shy, okay? Just a prep.
I'm certainly coming back with or without Lou.
Anytime. We have beds, we have food, whatever you need. Just you come here. If you're in trouble, you come here. Ma will take care of you.
I give her a big bear hug and I lift her off the ground a little bit.
Oh.
Thank you for everything, Frida. So good to meet you. Thank you for opening up your home to us.
Anytime. I love it. You know, now that all my kids are going out into the world and just, you know, gets a little lonely here sometimes. So do you ever want to come back?
You were the one who told me to leave.
I know. I'm so proud of you. She says, smooths your collar. It's a double-edged sword. But you're doing good things, even if I don't understand exactly what you're doing with the Fae or any of that. But
me either.
You know, follow your heart, Loopy.
Yeah. That usually ends up well. But yeah, let's finish up breakfast and I'm really sorry, I lost some of the knives you gave me, so I'm gonna have to take some from the kitchen. Chef needs their tools.
She looks at you and there's like a flash of steel in her eyes and she goes, "Which ones? You're not taking my good set. Are you gonna take my good set, child?"
No, I would swear. Never.
Oh.
I am too afraid to damage or lose them, to be honest with you. You love me, but you would kill me.
Just not the ones with the white stickers. You know my policy.
No, I know the ones. I know the ones. Nobody touches those.
All right. Okay, then anything else you want. You do. You can ask for some of my knives. She says and looks at you.
No. I would never deign. I would never deign to ask. But Frida, darling, I am in the market for a new shield.
Mm-hmm.
And we did find a very well-stocked armory.
Oh, okay. Which one?
They were a bit above my budget, but I stay close to the people around me. I intend to defend your daughter, my friends, and if there's anything you can do to help me out with that, or even just let me know if there's a sale happening over here.
Just a shield? I mean, any special thing? You just want a shield?
Oh, some armor. Yours has been fucked.
I mean, a whole-on upgrade is always a good idea, but I don't want to ask for too much. I just want to be able to protect everyone.
Okay, well, I mean, you know, I'll put out some feelers and I'm sure I can find you something at a very reasonable rate. And I mean my rates, not street rates. So you're looking for something, because I got just normal shields, but I'm assuming you want something magic if you're defending my daughter's honor and all that.
Mom, thank you for your hospitality. We will take the generic shit for now. Stuff. Sorry, Mom. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess we got a lot of stuff to sort out, so I guess we're gonna be together for a while, so any better equipment that you hear word of would probably be useful. But don't, you know, if there's something bigger, don't use, you know, your friends for that.
Bigger than my daughter's life?
There are bigger things.
You're a good kid. She, like, you know, pats your hand and says, yeah, we'll get you just a shield, Tony. Just something to hold you over. But next time you stop by, I'll have something good for you, okay? Or maybe I'll send it through that that mailing service. You've been getting my letters, right?
Yeah. I don't know how it works either. But it's working, so.
Well, I won't keep you anymore. I know you have big world-saving things to do. So, all right, come on. Help clear the plates. And everybody, you know, starts cleaning up, standing up. And yeah, so Tony, you can have a shield, just like a normal shield for now. They keep, you know, a small armory of, like, non-magical stuff here. And the offer is definitely open, you know, next time you come back in Chasiana, or maybe she can get something. If you can send her some money, like, she can get you maybe something magic. From that shop, Reginald's Rarities, that you stopped by before, too. Hell yeah. Anything else y'all want to do before you load back into the chicken hut?
No, just give my mom a big sloppy cheek kiss.
She gives you sweet kisses, and she hangs on to you, and she's just like, oh.
Maybe I'll just take you with me, Mom. You weigh nothing.
Oh, you just try. You just try. Oh, no. But, you know, I got the restaurant and Ubrin's coming back. And he's going to be so upset that he missed you. And he's going to be all butthurt about that. Then I'll have to comfort him. Then, you know. And I'm sure another kid will be back. I'm sure Charlie's not going to last much longer out there without you, Adam. He's getting bored. He's getting so bored. I'm sure he'll be back here soon.
He was excited about a rabbit the other day.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, that's our boy. That's our boy.
We'll be back. Yeah, sweet, simple child.
Yeah.
Well, it was good to see you.
Anyway. All right. You're also beautiful. And she's, like, out in the street. She's been following you for, like, 10 feet, you know, out of the restaurant, like, this whole time talking to you. And she's like, little the kisses church in goodbye. The street. Yeah. Yeah, the just leave. When are you leaving? Okay, there we go. 15 feet away. And she, you know, eventually walks back
to the restaurant. I wasn't wearing shoes.
Just waving the whole time. Yeah. And you head off. You head off into Jassiana. So, you return back to the chicken hut.
Time for this fucking ritual.
Yeah, so you make your way back out there. It's a short walk again. Heading back in was about 15-20 minutes or so outside of the city. And you wind your way back. Another gorgeous day in Chasiana. And as you are making your way back, it occurs to you, like, oh boy, you're going to be leaving the mortal realm again with its nice, predictable, beautiful weather and things that make sense. And heading back into the wilds, the realm of the Fae, where all that is waiting for you. And I think as, you know, Rook pulls out the little jar of gray, chunky paste and, you know, hands it around to all of you so you can see the fucking house again because it's been 24 hours, it really hits you what you're moving back into as you rub this shit all over your eyes.
I told myself never again, more shit. Here I
am. Well, at least it's actually the last time. No more of that. Yay. And you can drive when I give you permission to. So that'll be good.
Is there a learner's permit on this thing?
you know what? Yeah, sure. Yep. That's how it works. It will not work unless I say so. So that's, but it's just better if you pretend that's true. As you are, like, hopping up to the house and, you know, you get inside and everything looks exactly as you left it. You know, the kitschy little, like, cabin vibe as you step inside. And I don't suppose that the Weird Sisters gave you any kind of way to get back to them, right? We're just supposed to go there. They didn't give you a fairy ring or anything.
I don't recall any method of getting back to them.
It didn't specify. They just want us to walk. That's super nice of them. All right.
Should we bond before we worry about that? That seems like we need to get that done as soon as possible sort of thing.
Great. All right. Yeah, let's do that. And then we'll worry about that next episode. Tomorrow. Okay. Yeah. So she walks around the living room. She's like, right. And she seems to be looking at, like, walls and under furniture, like, she's very actively looking for something. And then she steps a foot down on one, like, floorboard in a corner of the room, and there's, like, a squeaking sound, and she's like, okay, yeah. And she reaches down and pulls up the board and pulls out, like, a dusty shoebox. She blows off and, you know, gets some of, the ash and floor dirt off of, and she puts it in the center here. And opens it up, and then there's like a rolled scroll inside that she immediately hands to you, Aoife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Aoife will take it and start studying it, and will motion with the hand towards Rook. All right, give me the ingredients.
Yeah, and she does, and she's doing the really annoying thing where she's like looking over your shoulder. It's like assembly instructions, right? And she like really wants to be involved, but she doesn't really want to read the instructions. So she's kind of setting things up and you know, like painting the lines on the floor and like putting the candles. And you're like, no, don't do that. Like, wait, no, do it this way. So there's a little bit of that going on. But yeah, you can get it set up eventually. And you see that most of the stuff, these ingredients are, you know, like the incense you need to burn. And like, here's the chalk lines you have to put on the floor. And the last thing and the weirdest thing that comes out of this box is a It looks like an ivory hoop that's a foot long or whatever, and it's got like canvas that's stretched taut in between it with these little screws that kind of hold it in place. And Rook sits in the middle of the circle here, and she reaches for that vial with the hairs in it and the golden needle, and she starts kind of trying to thread them in the middle. She's like, okay, let me know when you're ready to start.
Yeah, and then, yeah, Aoife will, you know, use her, you know, declarative voice, and will, you know, start ordering everyone around to do things and what to say at the right time.
Yeah, and you have, like, this whole thing you need to read, like, you know, during the ritual, and it takes a whole 10 minutes as a proper-ass ritual. And you all have to sit in the right spots, and it's all very uncomfortable. And so, are you ready to begin?
Yes.
According to Aoife's instructions, you know, you light the appropriate candles at the appropriate moments, and this incense starts to move through the house, and it's all very, like, autumnal, sharp smells that start to drift through this place. And as you're going, and Aoife reaches a point two or three lines in where you see the candles and the fireplace all visibly, like, go to a deep, dark dim, almost like the flames are being suppressed as Aoife continues to read this chant. And as you all sit in the little circles that have been, like, sketched out around you on the floor, they start to glow with this ambient orange light, and the smells and the light, and it's all getting very heady and very strange. And you see Rook is just, like, hyper-fixated on this cross stitch that she's working on in the very center of this circle that has, like, and now you see it and you're like, was it there before? Was it not? As she's, like, pulling this thread long and through on this little stitched image of a house in the center, as she's, like, adding a very, like, shitty little stick figure on one side of this house. With, you know, you see little horns coming out of the side and, like, orange hair, vaguely Aoife. Yeah, she's pulling the line through, and she stretches the thread really long. And Aoife, this is the point where you reach over and you're supposed to prick your finger with a knife onto the thread to drop some blood on there.
Yeah. Knife ready. Pink.
As you do, yeah, the white thread of this, like, silvery, whatever this was, like, stains crimson. As Rook continues to, like, complete this little person of you standing beside this house. And she goes again, she, like, ties off the thread, and you hear her going, like, shit, fuck, this is really hard. As she, like, threads another one. She's trying to do this cross stitch, and, like, Aoife's, you know, doing this big ritual chant, and Rook's just fucking trying her best. And she reaches, you know, out to you, Tony, for you to repeat what Aoife just did.
That was my best attempt.
Yeah, no, so you drop your blood onto the thread.
Yes.
Yeah. So you do so, and then, you know, Rook continues to make, like, a green person that's very large, with some, like, gold. Maybe those are pauldrons, as she's, like, trying to hand stitch whatever the fuck this is into, like, the, you know, the cross stitch pattern. And she completes and ties this one off, and with the third and final thread, she, like, strings that and reaches out to you, Lou, so you can drop the blood onto it.
Yeah, Lou just cuts her finger over one of her many scars and pops it on there.
Yeah, the last, you know, thread turns red. And Rook continues to stitch this little person, this little purple person with this, like, big white chunk of hair around the top here. And you can see, you know, as Rook, like, pulls this through, sweating and, like, cursing the entire time, and, like, you know, cuts off that final thread with her teeth. You see now the picture of the house that she was cross-stitching was, it was absolutely the chicken hut, like, done by somebody who clearly knew what they were doing, like, very beautiful in the center. And there's, like, the banner that says, like, home sweet home, you know, over the top of it. And there are these four figures now on either side of it, all lined up. And clearly what Rook was doing, they looked fucking terrible. But now that you look at them, and as the magic of the ritual is, like, taking place here, it looks like little cross-stitch versions of each of you around the house here. And Aoife, as you, like, the thread is pulled taut, yeah, and you say those final words, there's, like, the final flickering, and all of the fires in this house go out. And there's, like, a moment of quiet. And you all feel at home in this place. And it's not a very intense feeling. It's very subtle. But it's like that feeling you get when you walk into, you know, your house versus like a friend's apartment or like somewhere you've been before. It's just that feeling of peace as you sit in this place. And you know that this is now your home. And that's where we're going to end the episode for tonight.
Yay!
We're home!
We're home!
We were on a weird cross stitch made by a hag. Yeah. She said it was so.
Yay!
Oh, well, aww. Congratulations, everybody. You made it through another episode. This was a nice one with answers and stuff before we get into more horrible things and go see Weird Sisters and go back into the Feywild and stuff. So.
Precisely.
Yeah, a nice chatty episode.
Yeah.
No rolls were made.
No. We got to do it every once in a while. Eventually, we had all our rolls. We had a dungeon crawl. We had a big fight. It was good. We earned it.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you, everybody, so much for joining us for episode 17 of Venture Maidens. You all rock our socks. Yeah, like we said, this is the Venture Maidens. If you like what we do, please, please do consider subscribing, liking, following. All those things really do help us out to grow the show. If you follow us on social media, which is at everywhere on Venture Maidens, or at Venture Maidens on everything, everywhere. Just do it. Type Venture Maidens in. You'll find so many things. That's the best way to keep up with all the awesome stuff we're doing, you know, getting book updates and just all the cool new shows we have coming up and really, really good stuff. So make sure to do that. And speaking of supporting art, if you really love the show, I mean, you can always head on over to our Patreon account. Patreon is an awesome website where folks can donate monthly or annually to the creators they love. And all that money you donate goes right to us. And that's like our only source of income. So everybody who donates to Patreon, you literally keep the lights on here. You make everything possible. You make dreams come true. It's amazing. And for as little as $1 a month, you get a ton of awesome rewards, like hundreds of hours of bonus content and coloring book pages and all kinds of cool shit. Magic items. It's good. It's really good and really fun. So we always like to take a moment to thank our patrons at the highest donor tier levels. So let's go around and say a big, big thank you to Arnie's cohorts, starting off with thank you, Cody Becker at CodyRolls4 on Twitter.
Thank you, Debbie. I'm muted. Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you, Curry.
Thank you, Muffin at the Wanna Drury Lane.
Thank you so much, Nyssa McKinnon.
Thank you, Richie113 from our Discord.
And in Farrah's drinking mate tier, thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Markali.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Fable.
I wasn't sure if it was my turn or not.
And thanks, Tony.
Oh, Tony. Thank you, Tony. Oh, man. Y'all rock our socks. You're the bee's knees. We love you. So thank you so much, everybody. I have been your Dungeon Master, Celeste Konowich.
I am Katie, playing Luveri Sath, your Drow Rogue.
I'm Nassim. I was your half-orc fighter, the very tired Fatonia Silvertail.
And I am Sage, and I have been your baby bard, Aoife.
Baby bard, yes. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Until next time, everybody.
Venture away!
We're doing that like rounds. I love it. Okay, bye-bye.